Hello and welcome to the Money Talk podcast. I'm Ed Monk. Today on the show, we look back on a very good few days for markets, thanks, of course, to long hoped for news of an effective vaccine for COVID-19. Can markets go on to even greater things from here? And will we finally see that rotation back to value? And then what chances a tax raid on investment gains? We run the rule over new proposals for CGT. If you enjoy the show, please rate us, share us, or leave a comment wherever you get your podcasts. We have not one, but two effective COVID-19 vaccines in the works, and the markets have shown their appreciation by posting hefty gains. The S&P 500 index of US companies is at a new high this week, while the laggard FTSE 100 here in the UK is back to levels last seen in June. What's more, it's some of the market's least loved stocks which are making the running. To discuss a very good week for markets, I'm joined by Tom Stevenson, Investment Director here at Fidelity. Tom, welcome along. As I sit here this morning, I'm wondering whether 2020, despite it all, might actually be an overall positive year in markets. What a turnaround in the past week.
Certainly has been, in particular over in the US. I mean, I think, what are we now? For S&P 500, over 3,600 now. So, in answer to your question, I think it's extremely likely that that the US market and probably global markets as a consequence will actually be up on the year. And who would have predicted that back in February and March? It reminds me a bit of 1987, when you had that enormous stock market crash, and actually the year ended up higher than it started. It can often be the case, but I wouldn't have predicted it back in March, certainly.
No, and obviously we should always mention that the markets can go down as well as up. But as mentioned, we do have this new high for the S&P 500. It had already beaten its own record back in September. And it has now surpassed that. And here in the UK, the FTSE 100, which has lagged other major markets this year, that's back to where it was in June. The thing that jumped out at me, Tom, is why exactly we were so optimistic back in the summer and the start of the summer. There wasn't a vaccine in sight back then, and we knew that second waves were likely. How do you think the market has read the pandemic this year? It's obviously had to deal with a lot of uncertainty, and it's struggled to find the correct level, maybe.
Well, it has struggled to find the correct level, but in a way that doesn't surprise me, because this is such a unique situation. Clearly we've not been in this situation before, and markets do struggle a bit when you get these unprecedented scenarios as we've had this year. But what markets are very good at is looking through the current news flow and looking at what's coming down the track, and I think that's what they were doing back in June. They were just a bit premature about it. I mean, we had that V-shaped recovery in April and May, and you say that we knew that second waves were coming. I'm not sure that we really did back in June. I think that the weather was different. We were just feeling a bit more positive than we are at the moment. I think we were taken a bit by surprise in the autumn when these second waves came through with the ferocity that they have. But having said that, when you start looking forward to what's coming next year, and you look at what's happening to corporate earnings, the outlook is much more positive next year, and that's what the markets are looking towards.
Yeah, and the emergence of vaccines, and we should say, of course, that there's bound to be bumps in the road here, not just on the science side of this, but in terms of the logistics of rolling out this huge operation of getting people vaccinated. That's, it seems to me, unlikely to go completely smoothly. So, things can, or perhaps we should expect there to be a few more bumps in the road, right?
Yeah, I think we must expect that. I mean, that big jump a week or so ago when the Pfizer vaccine was first announced was pretty extraordinary, and it didn't take long for markets to have slightly second thoughts once they sort of thought through the consequences or rather the challenges of the logistical challenges of getting this vaccine to where it's needed, and it will take time. And I think between now and the spring, there'll be a few ups and downs along the way.
Yeah, and obviously the numbers, there's sort of discussion here in the UK about which way the numbers are going. But in the US, of course, they do look quite dire, and none of this vaccine relief is going to come in time to stop. We've got Thanksgiving, we've got Christmas, we've got lots of cold weather. Things could get bad in terms of the numbers before they get better. I wanted to talk to you, Tom, about one of the notable features of this surge in prices and what's going on underneath those headline levels, because there has been a recovery, quite a strong recovery last week in particular, for value stocks at the expense of growth stocks. You and I have spoken about this many times this year. And you saw evidence of this, I think, when I think on Tuesday we got news of this Pfizer vaccine. The FTSE rose something like 5% that day. And the S&P, where there is, of course, a great weighting towards these growth stocks in the tech sector in particular, it rose by much less. It still rose, of course, but it was a bit more zero sum over there, wasn't it? You had gains for value, but perhaps that was at the expense of growth. Is this really the rotation that we've been waiting for so long, and that you and I have spoken about so often?
Well, only time will tell. But as an investor, it's the key question at the moment, because, I suspect that many investors are in the situation. I know that, I look at my portfolio, the bias of my portfolio is towards these growth stocks, because they are the parts of the market which have done so well. So it is likely that most people do have a bias towards these. And when you look into 2021, if there is to be a big rotation from defensives to cyclicals, from growth to value, then, it's likely that many of us will want to be, just rejigging the asset allocation within our portfolios a bit. So it's a big question. It feels that way. It feels like a rotation is overdue. If you look back over the last 10 years, growth stocks have risen by about 225% over that period. That compares with less than 90% for the value stocks. And that's feeding through into valuations. If you look at the growth stocks, PE ratio of, in the high 30s, value stocks down in the teens. That's a very big divergence in valuation, probably wider actually than we saw 20 years ago in the dot-com boom. So, it feels like we're ready for a rotation, and all it requires is the trigger. And, I can't think of a better trigger than the discovery and the rollout of a vaccine. So it seems plausible, but do you know what? We've waited a long time for this rotation, and it has failed to show up.
Yeah, I think probably, Tom, you've been reading some of the same analysis that I've been reading. Those numbers seem familiar to me. And in that analysis, there was a nice metaphor. They said, sometimes in markets you get black swan events, but this rotation seems to be more like a grey rhino. You can see it. It's big, but it doesn't do much. And then suddenly it charges very quickly. That seems to be the way with value investing. There's certainly lots of active funds out there and investors in those funds who have been bemoaning the fact that we haven't seen this rotation, but they've had a real burst of gains in the last week, and that's going to relieve some of that pressure on some portfolios.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. I did read that analogy. It's a rather nice image, isn't it? This grey rhino, which sort of just sits there doing nothing, and then suddenly, when it does start charging, you want to get out of the way, or at least
or
you want
to
follow it. Yes, get on board. Exactly. And that's the nature of rotations into value. They're short and sharp and explosive when they arrive, and you don't want to miss out on them.
Yeah, indeed. Well, let's keep a close eye on what happens from here, Tom. There's bound to be more ups and downs. But for now, let's move on, because there was a second topic I wanted to cover today, which is to do with capital gains tax. Now, we've had, Tom, a report from the Office for Tax Simplification, that's a government body, and that suggested that rates of CGT should be equalised with income tax. That's the broad reading of that. Let's look at this. I mean, without regurgitating every line of this report, what does it say, Tom? What's at stake in these proposed changes?
Yes, I mean, this is how these things sort of leak out. You know, you have a report, it sort of it proposes some of the things that might happen, and it's a way of sort of softening up the market for these things actually being delivered. You mentioned one of them, and this is probably the most important, which is this proposed equalisation of capital gains tax rates with income tax rates. And the reason why it's important is because there is such a big gap between the two at the moment. So capital gains tax rates for basic rate taxpayers, 10%, for higher rate higher rate taxpayers, 20%, and that of course compares with income tax rates of 20% for basic rate and 40% and 45% for higher and additional rate income taxpayers. So that's a big gap, and it kind of makes sense logically to equalize them, because the people that would suffer are the people with the broadest shoulders, who can most afford to pay more for capital gains tax. You know, there are reasons why you might want to do that, if it discourages entrepreneurial activity, for example. So it's not a simple decision that the Chancellor would make, but you can see why he would consider it. There are other things that you can do. You can reduce the annual allowance, for example. At the moment, you can make £12,300 worth of capital gains a year tax free. You know, at the point of death, gains which are passed on are treated in a slightly different way, so that someone inheriting a capital gain effectively takes the value of the asset at the time of death rather than the price that was paid for it when it was initially bought. So there are a few different things that are being proposed in this suggested way forward, but none of them are particularly agreeable if you are sitting on capital gains.
Indeed, and there's a property element here, of course, because you didn't mention it there, but investments in second properties, basically any property that's not your home, they're already higher anyway. So instead of 10% and 20%, it's 18% and 28%, I believe.
That's correct. Yeah.
Now, as you say, Tom, we've been here before with similar reports on big tax reforms. The one that springs to mind is around pensions tax relief. That happens all the time. We've had reports suggesting that could be changed. It hasn't happened. They don't often come to anything, but if they are going to happen, this is how it starts.
Yes, absolutely. You know, the options are put down. It's fed out. Everyone has a chance to sort of mull it over and express their doubts or agreement. This is how it starts. But we have been here before, and nothing has come of it. The thing to remember about capital gains tax is, it's a relatively small earner for the government, actually. I mean, it's about £8 billion a year, I think, and that compares with about £180 billion a year from income tax. So, you know, it's not necessarily the most obvious place to go looking for additional revenue, because there isn't a huge amount to be had there. Plus, the kinds of people that are paying capital gains tax are probably in a situation to do something about it and to minimise their tax payments. So, I think this is one of the reasons why it's always been resisted in the past. You know, actually, the benefit doesn't necessarily match up with the political cost of doing it.
Yeah, but I mean, that said, the government certainly has a motive to pull more in tax, doesn't it? Spending on COVID-19 relief has been huge, and they do need to claw some of that back, you would think. Next year, we could see a bit more of this as things get back to normal, we hope, and the Chancellor is able once again to kind of spell out these sorts of plans.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the government has spent, you know, big on the pandemic so far. I mean, I saw a figure earlier on today of something like £300 billion. So, you know, faced with that kind of extra spending, you can see why the government would want to look for all possible ways of clawing some of that back. And, you know, it's going to want to do it in the most politically expedient way. And that is, you know, probably looking to, as I say, people with the broadest shoulders in the first instance to play their part.
Yeah, indeed. Finally then, Tom, I guess before, you know, investors get too gloomy that more of their gains are going to be taken in tax, it is important to say that most people don't pay it, a point you've made. And there are, of course, substantial shelters from CGT in the form of ISAs primarily, but also pensions as well.
Yes, that's right. I mean, it depends on the asset that you're talking about. And one of the issues about capital gains tax, and I'm glad you mentioned property before, because I think that's a key area where a lot of people are potentially exposed to an increase in capital gains tax. Because one of the problems, of course, with property, we've talked in the past about the inherent illiquidity of property. You can't sell a little bit of a property. You know, if you've got a portfolio of shares, you can sell a few of those shares and take advantage of your annual allowance each year. You can't really do that with a property. So I think that's where people might be exposed to a pretty painful change in the rules.
Indeed, indeed. Okay, well, Tom, that's it for this week. It's all we have time for. Thanks an awful lot for joining me.
Thanks, Ed.
You've been listening to the Money Talk podcast. Check fidelity.co.uk for daily written updates and articles on these and other topics from across Fidelity in the UK. And subscribe via iTunes to get the podcast downloaded direct to your devices every week. Please be aware that the value of investments and the income you get from them can go down as well as up, so you may not get back what you invest. This information doesn't constitute investment advice and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision, nor should it be treated as a recommendation for any investment. Eligibility to invest in an ISA or a pension and the value of tax savings depends on personal circumstances, and all tax rules may change. You will not normally be able to access money held in a pension until the age of 55. Reference to specific securities or funds should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell these securities or funds, and is included for the purpose of illustration only. Fidelity Personal Investing does not give personal recommendations. If you're unsure about the suitability of an investment, you should speak to an authorised financial advisor.